So, welcome everybody. For those of you who don't know me, I know most of you, but not everyone. My name is Dr. Brian Walsh, and I'm a chiropractor and a kind of nutrition guy. And this is my 21st year in practice. I was an engineer for 10 years before I did this, and it was a chiropractor that kept me from having surgery, and I got pretty excited and jumped ship and went back to school, and now I consider myself a bioengineer because I work with people instead of circuit boards, which is a lot more interesting, actually. So specifically, we're talking about the autoimmune. I call it the autoimmune matrix, but I'm going to try not to make the lecture part like really long because you can kind of boil it down into some common factors that I believe are triggers for this. But I'd like to have some question and answers time, so if people want to ask questions or entertain any other things, then we can chat about that too. Okay. What I like to do is I always start this out for those of you who have heard it. It's okay. It's always good to hear it more than once. It's our philosophy, my philosophy about how we should look at things in practice. It says the doctor of the future will give no medicine, but will interest his patients in the care of the human frame and diet and the cause and prevention of disease. Right? That was by Thomas Edison, like 100 years ago. So he had a very holistic looking approach to things. Looking at the human frame because it houses the nervous system and it's very important. Getting to the diet because I believe that that's really a critical element in this whole autoimmune thing. If that's not in place, people just won't get better. And then getting to the cause and prevention, right? Because medicine is good at life-saving and surgeries and those type of things, but not necessarily these chronic issues like these autoimmune conditions. So it's really getting to the cause and then preventing it. So, just a quick couple quick facts. They estimated around year 2000, there was roughly 9 million people that had suffered from some form of autoimmune disease. There's 5 to 10 of them that account for most of them, but there's actually up to like 70 different conditions that are some of them very rare, but still considered autoimmune. Now, some 20 years later, depending on the source, it's anywhere from like 15 to 25 million that they believe are affected by this. So it's really going up at pretty quick rate. And some of the things we're going to look at, I think we'll explain that. But conditions like Hashimoto's, which is a thyroid condition, that's way up there. That's like the top five. Rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, celiac disease, right, with the whole gluten thing, and multiple sclerosis. Those are some of the biggies, the most common ones. Basically, what's happening is there's something going on with the body, and we'll talk about the causes, but that is the body's actually kind of turning on itself. So instead of just doing its normal cleanup job and getting bacteria and viruses, it starts turning on some tissue of the body. So for Hashimoto's, it's the thyroid. For rheumatoid arthritis, it's usually the joints and different parts of the body. Multiple sclerosis is usually the nerves, right? The brain and the peripheral nerves. So something's going on that's triggering that response, and these are the different categories that I want to talk about. Basically, from a medical standpoint, it's really pretty much the same. They may vary the medications a little bit, but basically, there's some kind of immune suppression drug typically used, along with or in addition to some form of steroid at some dose, right? And for most people, that will get some results. Sometimes it puts it into remission, whatever that condition is. Some of them are safer than others, and some of them have better results than others. But as getting to the cause of things, while sometimes that is needed, especially if people are in really bad flare-ups with the RRA or they're having an MS flare where they can't walk or function well, sometimes that'll pull them out of a flare, but then you need to get to the cause, right, and find out what's going on. And that's kind of what we're about. And when I look at it, I like to look at three general categories. One being more of like the chemical or internal part of things that can go wrong with the body. The other is more on the mental emotional side. And then the other one's more like physical, because there's things like trauma and different things like that that can actually trigger some of these responses. When it comes to the chemical side of that triangle, food is always at the top of the list because that's really supposed to be our fuel, right? And what's happened in the past 50 to 100 years, we transitioned from a whole food, pretty much organic diet, right? Pesticides didn't used to be a common practice. many years ago. It's non-existent. And now with industrialization and all that other thing of food and shelf life, we've gone to what I call non-food, you know, where you have a lot of these packaged goods with preservatives, dyes, all these different things. And it takes some of the nutritional value out of those. Whereas whole food has all kinds of cofactors that actually, you know, help the body repair and replace itself, basically. The other factor in that chemical triangle are things like environmental pesticides and heavy metals and these toxins that we really don't realize on a daily basis how much of this we get exposed to. Just the majority of personal care products, especially for women, quite toxic products, right? A lot of these, they are not regulated by the FDA. The manufacturers do not have to label everything that's in these perfumes and lotions and all that stuff. They can call it proprietary. And some of these things have what they call endocrine disrupting things that can affect the hormones in a very negative way. So just things we put on topically can be a problem, not to mention just airborne stuff, water, all these different sources, right? We're constantly being barraged with on a daily basis, actually. Things like genetically modified foods, right? There's still a lot of concern about the safety of these things long-term when you're putting these in the body. There's really not an adequate long-term safety study. In many parts of Europe, they don't even allow genetically modified foods because they're not happy with the possible health ramifications of eating these things for long periods of time. Things like chronic immune system problems. So say somebody has Epstein-Barr, or they have some form of a herpes simplex virus or something like that, that is a low-grade immune challenge, we call it, in the body. And sometimes that is enough to weaken that person's immune system so they're more susceptible to having some kind of flare-up from an immune condition if they're exposed to other factors, right? These other factors that I'm mentioning. A big thing that I think that is also tied back to the food with nutritional deficiencies, because your body requires all these minerals and all these vitamins and B vitamins and complexes. And the farther you go away from whole food, then you get less and less of those real nutrients the body needs. So it really can't do the things it needs to do, especially with the immune system. You know, you need B12 pretty heavily for your white blood cells to function. Well, you need iron as part of the immune system in your defense. And so all those factors start adding up when you don't have enough of that stuff. Something called the omega-3 fatty acids, fish oil is the most common, right? Your body uses these things for anti-inflammatory activity in the body. And if you don't have enough of those, you can actually get this shift in your body where internally it has a high level of inflammation, where you can reverse that with either fish oils or flax oils or nuts and seeds to help shift that balance back to more of a, what I would call, an anti-inflammatory state in your body. So these are things that some people, especially kids, they're not eating enough of these things. And so they get like an inflamed state of their body, basically. And then there's other factors, which I'm going to head to next, which is what I call the gut connection. There's about 60% or so of the immune system is resident in the gut, right, from your mouth all the way down. And the more and more study they do about how the gut influences the rest of our overall health, it's like very integral to everything, to the brain, to the immune system, to our muscles. And when that goes out of balance, it starts creating a lot of different problems in the body, which can set up part of that immune problem. And it's pretty interesting too, because in the past 25, 30 years, the incidence of gastrointestinal problems, things like IBS and Crohn's and colitis, acid reflux, all these things have just continued to get worse, along with the autoimmune thing, so along with other conditions too. So I believe a big part of this thing is that gut connection, that when that goes awry for various reasons, for a poor diet, for stress, people don't realize that when you're under stress for long periods of time, and that's another factor that throws everything off, is that the lining of the digestive tract, that mucus lining, it starts wearing thin, because the higher the stress, those cells do not produce the mucus as well when you're under stress. And so that makes that, what they call the leaky gut, you might have heard that term, leaky gut, condition more apt to happen, which leaves you open to things like bacteria and parasites and viruses and all these things. And it allows food particles, like larger food particles, to go possibly into your bloodstream. So whenever that compromise happens to the gut, it's like this open door to many other different things that can really cause a lot of havoc down the road. Some people don't have like enough hydrochloric acid in their system, and that also makes it so they don't digest food as well. And then something that I think might be getting a little better, but still not great, is the overuse of antibiotics, right? There was like, it was like 10 plus years ago, the Pediatric Association sent out kind of a memo type thing that said, we just can't be doling out antibiotics to every ear that is inflamed and every sinus that has a problem, right? Because they were seeing that it was creating all these other problems. The big one being that leaky gut situation. I've had several patients come to me and said, a lot of this started after I went through like a month worth of antibiotics because I had these chronic sinus infections, right? My digestion wasn't the same after that. I just didn't feel the same after that. So that could be another thing that's like the door that opens up the problem so that you're more susceptible. I mentioned like physical factors. So sometimes trauma, especially physical trauma from really bad accidents, car accidents, falls, traumas, sometimes these trigger an immune system weakness in the body. And if you had some of these other factors that were already weighing you down, then there's a possibility that a car accident might be enough to push you over the edge, right? To where you then develop MS or rheumatoid arthritis or something like that, because you just had too many other problems, and then the trauma from the car accident was a real shock to the system, and that can push you over the edge, basically. I mentioned as part of that triangle was kind of the emotional or mental part of that triangle. All kinds of things like losing loved ones, stress from family and jobs, ongoing stress, depression, anxiety, all these things weaken the immune system. And they can measure your white blood cell activity is not as strong when you're under stress. And this mental or emotional component can be a part of that. And they've actually done a little research. It's not as accepted by like the traditional medicine, but people more alternative. A lack of self-esteem or lack of self-care / love for yourself is a common element in some of these autoimmune things. It's almost like the person's telling themselves they don't like themselves type thing. You know what I mean? They don't like who they are kind of thing. And then with these other factors, that's part of a trigger that turns the immune system against the body. So these are all factors that we look at, you know, when someone's got these different conditions. Because if you don't, you just don't get the resolution that you want, right? Because you want to get ideally rid of it, at least get it into like remission where it doesn't come back. And that can be done naturally once you start addressing all these different areas. And things like, you know, the stress weakens the adrenal glands, so there's nutritional things you can do for the adrenal glands to get them back. Things like iodine, selenium, all those different factors for the thyroid gland, because that's very important in thyroid diseases. These things, they just add up over time, right? And so whatever the cause is, that's what we want to address, right? We want to get to the cause, and then the body tries to self-heal itself. So I mentioned if there's food issues. So one of the most powerful diets, for autoimmune conditions is what's called autoimmune paleo diet. So it's a very strict paleo diet that is taking certain, it's pretty much a whole food diet, but it even restricts certain things like nightshades and certain nuts and seeds and all these different things. And they found that if someone's in the middle of some kind of flare-up, a lot of times just doing that autoimmune paleo diet can be very effective at calming the system down and reducing inflammation in the body. So that's one of the things that we always look at is going to something like that, the autoimmune paleo diet. Another version of that is not quite as strict as the Whole30 diet, which is a very effective, again, whole food diet, no processed things, no sugar, even honey, because you just want anything that could weaken the system out of your diet. That's basically what you want. So I always kind of, food is always the base, right? Something that can be very powerful depending on the person's overall health is some form of intermittent fasting. The most easy version of that is like skipping breakfast and having a window of eating where it's like 11 or 12 in the morning to like 7 at night, 6 or 7. And they found that's enough time of fasting, like 14 plus hours, that it actually starts helping the immune system regulate itself better and can help with weight loss a little bit. And it's safe to do that as long as you're in fairly good shape. You know, if you're really, really weak, you got to be careful. But as long as you don't have too many adrenal problems and you're not having blood sugar crashes, it can be very effective to do this intermittent fasting combined with the other diet. Exercise from if people, depending on where their condition is, the gentle walking is adequate, gentle biking. People, if they can handle high intensity interval training, that's really an awesome way to get exercise, reduce stress hormones, and increase your cardio. But that's only if somebody's like in good enough shape to do that kind of exercise. But even the walking or something simple as if you've ever seen those rebounders, those small rebounding things, bouncing up and down on those for 5 to 10 minutes a day, can be effective for the lymph, you know, getting your lymphatic system moving. And then, and when it comes to the mental or emotional part, in addition to whatever coping mechanisms or therapy someone may need, just simple relaxation techniques, right? There's a ton of relaxation techniques, you know, deep breathing and meditation, all these different things that lower the stress hormones and increase the ability of your immune system to handle itself, to regulate itself better. Because it's not a matter of too much or too little. You want it to regulate itself the way it's supposed to, not go one way or the other. Because if it goes way, way too low, then you get sick from viruses and that kind of thing. And if it's too high, that's when you start getting more of the allergy and autoimmune things that start happening in the body. There are some nutrients. You know, everybody's different. When we do our nutrition response testing that we do in the office, a muscle testing system, I'm always trying to rule out these toxins of heavy metals from mercury in somebody's teeth, or they may have a job that exposes them to lots of chemicals, or they wear toxic makeup all the time, or something like that. We want to rule out those. We want to rule out food sensitivities like gluten and dairy products and all these other things. These are like foundational things. If you don't handle those, then the body just won't shift itself. And then making sure there's not some kind of, some people, if they're prone to yeast infections or fungal infections, that also makes them more susceptible to this autoimmune stuff. So ruling out all those kind of factors can help people reach a baseline and then get a really clean diet to start shifting that immune response. Some of the common things that you might have heard from a nutritional standpoint are things like vitamin D. They have found that a fair amount of people with autoimmune conditions tend to be low or deficient in vitamin D. So that's a fairly easy thing to correct, to measure in the blood and then correct it. Selenium, I'd mentioned, that's really helpful for the thyroid. And some people, if you get it early enough for that Hashimoto's thyroid condition, and you get them on a good selenium, maybe a little iodine if it tests well, that can actually calm down that autoimmune response in the thyroid gland. But the sooner the better on that one. Zinc is a good, that's like a background nutrition mineral that your body needs for the immune system to work. I mentioned the omega oils, either through fish oils or flax, chia seeds, nuts and seeds. You know, those are good sources of the good oils because those help the inflammation go down overall, you know, in the body. And then a B complex, like for the B6, the B12, the folate, those are really critical for that whole white blood cell, red blood cell activity to happen, as well as iron. There are some herbs they found that, like, it doesn't necessarily cure things, but it can help the overall inflammation. Things like Boswellia or frankincense is the other name for that. You probably have heard a lot about the curcumin or turmeric, right? The curcumin is kind of the active part of the turmeric. White willow bark, which is kind of, that was kind of where aspirin came from, right? The white willow bark. It's not as strong as aspirin, and it's safer for that to take for long periods of time without causing gastro problems. And then something else that can be beneficial when it comes to calming down the overall inflammation in the body, especially with some of the rheumatoid arthritis stuff, is something they call systemic enzymes. And those are enzymes that could be a combination of pancreatic enzymes and other enzymes that when you take them on an empty stomach, it has a way of breaking down some of these immune protein complexes that cause part of this autoimmune thing, especially in rheumatoid arthritis. And so it helps people with their joints and their muscle pain pretty quickly in a lot of folks. So that can be very beneficial. These are just kind of like things that you that are general things, but you still need to get to the causes, right? Whatever the cause is, whether it's a toxin or too much stress or the food's horrible, you just need to get to those foundational things in order for you to get the real, you know, the full effect of all these things. And there are different blood tests, right? There's lots of, typically if someone's looking like they have some, the first thing they test is for is something called the ANA factor. If that's positive, a lot of times they'll go down, you'll send you to a rheumatologist and then you get all these. There's many tests that they can do if your ANA is positive. Some people, they will have a positive ANA, but they won't have any symptoms. So those kind of people need to be watched. But whenever the ANA is positive, and if they say have a lot of RA-type symptoms or different things, then that's when they go to rheumatologists typically, and they do a lot of battery, see if somebody has lupus or RA or the multiple sclerosis, the different categories, right? But that's typically how it goes with ruling out from a blood test fashion. When I do the nutrition testing using muscle testing, I use that basically to find out what all the interfering factors are, right? Whether it's a food or whether it's a toxin or they have some other virus or something in their body. So like for thyroid conditions, I've helped some people. It wasn't autoimmune yet, but it was more of a hyperthyroid. And in the majority of those cases, a hyperthyroid, and those can be very dangerous because your heart rate can go very high. But if you get them when they're initially diagnosed, a lot of those have some kind of virus that's actually attacking their body and it's attacking the thyroid. And if you can identify that quick enough and get a remedy for it, the autoimmune, the hyperthyroid will calm down. We've helped at least a half a dozen people do that. But you have to catch it really quick because if you can't, then the heart rate gets out of control and they have to either take your thyroid out or nuke it, basically, right? So always getting to that cause thing first. I think that's that there. Good. So it's really the big picture, right? Don't just think of it's this thing or it's that thing or it's the other thing. We still have a big problem in medicine, right? About being tunnel vision, right? And specialists here, there, and there. And that's not how you get well. You get well from the holistic big picture of ruling out all these factors I talked about with stress and emotions and food and chemicals and handling each one of those, because one person might have a couple of them and someone's got, you know, six of them going on in their life and they just feel miserable. And then addressing them through diet and all these other things, and then that gets the result, typically. And hopefully, you know, avoiding or getting off of the medications. We've helped several people go into remission with RA and multiple sclerosis and lupus. I actually had one patient, she was in her late 60s, early 70s. She had mercury fillings removed, right? And they weren't removed the good way. There's a bad way to take these things out. And she went into an autoimmune response, and she was like not doing too bad to in a couple months being diagnosed with lupus. And thankfully she came to me shortly after that diagnosis, and we got her detoxed, got the bad food out of her diet, got some immune stuff for her body in there, and in 8 months she was no longer testing as lupus positive. So it can be done, you know, especially the sooner the better after the diagnosis. You know, if you can make those early changes soon after a diagnosis, you can turn them around. And she was in her early 70s, so that was very happy time for both of us, you know, because she changed and just totally turned around really quick. But for her, it was a chemical thing, right? The mercury got released, it overwhelmed her system, and then she went south, you know. So if you want good mercury remover, there's Dr. Chris Edwards right here that does a great job with dentistry up in Tierra. It's my dentist. So, does anybody have any questions? We'll open it up for questions. Oh, come on, you guys got to have more than that.
How about adaptogens?
Yeah, so actually, I did a talk on that the month before. He's talking about adaptogens. These is a class of like plant substances or herbs that help your body regulate stress and adapt to your environment. They can be very good at, especially if someone has a high stress environment that they work in or they live in. It actually helps them tolerate stress, and it keeps the stress hormones like cortisol from weakening their body as much. And it increases stamina in a lot of people. And some of them, depending on which ones, are, even have a little bit like astragalus, have an immune enhancing effect. So the adaptogens can be really good for enhancing, like as part of someone's program while they're handling whatever causes were there. That's a good one. And any others, blazing questions? Oh, you guys are too easy.
Kind of already said it, but I was just sort of recently, I guess within the last year, diagnosed with autoimmune. Had it for a long time and didn't realize it. I think I've had it for years and didn't realize it. But I just recently, in some of my reading, realized that at least there's an attitude out there in traditional medicine that I will never be off of my medicine.
Yeah, that's not a good opinion, and
And it's
my
really,
that's not my
I'm
opinion, but
frustrated with that. You know, I thought I could look forward to, like, you know, cancer patients being cancer-free or something like that. And that kind of surprised me.
Well, because of the way they basically handle the autoimmune condition of immune suppression and then calming inflammation down with some form of anti-inflammatory, usually a steroid. And they've seen with their history of treating these conditions that when you take people off them, they go into a flare-up again. So they just say, "I'm sorry, you have to stay on this the rest of your life." Well, that's basically because they're never handling the causes of these things. So a lot of times, and it depends, like I said, the longer you've had a condition that's been ruminating, it does get harder to control it. So that just depends on the person's internal ability, you know, to recover basically. But if nothing else, we can get people down to lower levels of the need for those things. And like I said, sometimes off of them. It's just once you identify the bad stuff and get it out and clean up the diet, then you have a good chance of recovering. But that is pretty much their opinion of autoimmune conditions, that you have to be on something the rest of your life. Anything else?
Is diabetes considered an autoimmune condition?
So there is, they've been doing more and more research, and they have like two or three categories now, maybe a fourth, of diabetes. The vast majority in America is adult onset type 2, which I believe is pretty much lifestyle and too much stress and not enough good food and too many carbs, right? I believe that's the vast majority. But in the case of, say, especially type 1, where it usually hits children more, that they believe is usually triggered by a virus when they're young that shuts down their pancreas. So I think that's a different scenario, but it can still be autoimmune, and it's usually when they're young that they classify the diabetes as an autoimmune condition. They don't exactly know what triggers this in these young kids mostly. It doesn't happen very often in adults. The adult form is usually just excess, you know, not having the good things. And the younger type 1 diabetes is considered an autoimmune thing for the most part. There again, I would love to get a young person that just got diagnosed with that and see if we couldn't turn it around before it shut everything down. And unfortunately, even with the young kids, when they find it, it's usually already advanced. It's already has shut down their pancreas, and they just can't not take something because it actually like destroys their pancreas, their pancreatic cells, and ability to produce insulin. So, yeah, that's a tough one. That one. But you could potentially, depending on how old they were and how soon you got it, lessen their amount of insulin they needed. That's a possibility. So, any other blazing questions? Gosh, you guys are really easy.
There's an acro diet that we call an autoimmune paleo
Correct. Yep. It was specifically not designed for people that had some form of autoimmune condition. It doesn't matter what type of condition it is, because it's a very basic program. Whole foods and fruits and vegetables, not a lot of fruit. And but they limit things that could normally be healthy for someone that didn't have autoimmune conditions, like the nightshades, sometimes, tomatoes, potatoes, peppers. These type of people don't respond well to those foods. So they take them out for a while and see how they respond. And then once you're on that, like for 2 to 3 months, then you can experiment with food, bringing food back in to see if it causes any triggers. Especially if they have a lot of joint problems, the nightshades, you should always take those out because a lot of times their joints get better when they take out the nightshades. Anything else? Going. It's back on. Okay, good. So the question had to do in relation to nightshades, and it's a good thing that God made, which I totally agree with. And is there a way, or is there certain people? So the active chemical in these nightshades that's common is called solanine. It's a plant compound that's common to all nightshades. And they believe that's one of the major offenders, is this solanine. I'm not sure if they have a blood test for it, because mostly they just do an elimination diet, and see how you do. I actually have a way of testing that. Last year, I figured out a way with some other folks that trained me to. I have a solanine vial that I can actually see if people react to this solanine, and then we do a trial of avoiding it. Ideally, yes, we should be able to eat everything, in my opinion. However, if somebody has a gut problem that's making them leaky gut kind of thing, then they're more likely to have an issue with it. Some immune conditions will make you more susceptible to food sensitivities. And then if you're deficient in certain nutrients, you can be more likely to have food sensitivities. Because some people we had them avoid it for like 3 months or more. And some of them they could incorporate back in to their diet once they cleaned everything up. So yeah, ideally we should be able to eat everything. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
I've been trying to increase my supplementation with calcium and the D3 due to medication that I'm on and just the COVID thing and
Sure,
everything.
yeah.
It seems to me that when I take these supplements, though, I tend to get what I'm going to call restless leg.
Okay.
But I'm not sure that, but my legs are just, they get almost like tickly. They
Yeah.
irritate me.
Yeah, that's
Is that
usually,
possible?
yes, it is. That's usually a sign that you're either not digesting them well, or you don't need everything that's in there. And you can get too much vitamins, right? Some people react poorly if they get too many vitamins. Because, ideally, our main vitamin source is food, right? That's the ideal scenario. So when you start synthesizing them, however, whether it's a whole food vitamin, which is better, or a synthetic vitamin, it's still not the ideal form for your body. So, and some people, they don't process them well, and they'll kind of cause either muscle problems or maybe they get cramps or irritation, So they can do that, yeah. Or they're not in the right ratio, maybe you need less of one and more than another, depending on your body chemistry. So yeah. sometimes I've gotten people better by getting them off their vitamins. They were doing too many of them, you know. And they felt better when they reduced their vitamins. So. But that's sometimes that they're doing too much, you know, like 20 different supplements and their body's not using it all. Especially if they got a leaky gut, you know. Sometimes that's also a sign of leaky gut. If you're taking vitamins and you react poorly to them, that's a sign of leaky gut. Which is another topic. We have another talk on that. Anything else? All right. One more.
With the MS, it's basically your body eating the nerve and nasal. Have you seen where, like, I have 4 lesions?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen where anybody has reversed that?
I'm not aware of, like, I don't know if there's any studies that have been done on that very thing you're talking about. Even like if you put them on whatever it is, the immune suppression drug and the steroid, does that make it grow back or does that reduce the lesion, right? Typically not, but I'm not aware of any natural studies that do that. But, you know, the nervous system and brain are an incredible thing, you know, so it figures out how to rewire around stuff and do things and still get things done. So if you can stop that inflammatory process, you know, and the immune system attacking the nerves. I've had at least 6 or more MS cases that went into remission without their medication. You know, once we got the heavy metals out of their body and the viruses or whatever else they had and got them eating real food, all sugar, you know, that type of thing. Yeah. Yeah, with the MS, it depends on how far along it is, right? Because there are some extreme cases of MS where they're too far along and there's a lot of damage. Right? Like I said, the body is resilient and can work around a lot of things, but if you get a certain level of that damage, then that's not repairable. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I just love getting people that have recently been diagnosed with autoimmune conditions because they respond so well, as long as they do their part. any more, Brave?
I hear you talk a lot about people who are newly diagnosed. What if people who've been dealing with it for a long time?
Yeah, and so the results are sometimes harder with that because if there is physical damage involved, like to a nerve in the case of MS, or in Hashimoto's, when they have that for long periods of time, depending on the extent of the autoimmune, it actually will, the thyroid will no longer be able to produce the amount of hormones it needs to. So it's like that damage beyond the point of repair. So when those kind of things happen, a lot of times you can reduce dosages of medications and things, but may not be able to get them off of it.
You can't repair the damage, but can you stop or slow the progression?
Oh yeah, no, that's usually, a lot of times you can stop it from going farther when you handle all those causes I talked about, you know, and get the internal inflammation down in the body. Through diet and stress reduction, those kind of things, then you can stop it or halt it, you know, basically, yeah.
Is there a point where you say no remission is not possible?
That's not really something I can predict, you know, whenever I work with somebody. I mean, I'm always an optimist, and if people were willing to do their part and give it a run, I mean, usually within 6 months to a year, you know if you're winning or not. You know, that's basically, I mean, usually within 2 to 3 months you see changes, but it's usually a good 6 months to a year before people are on a better plane, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Judy,
yeah, I was wondering what you thought about the medical medium, the gentleman who writes all the books.
Yes.
He doesn't believe in autoimmunity at all. He says, you know, our bodies are too smart for it.
Yeah.
And most of his remediation is through whole food, though.
Yeah, that's a great way. You get a lot of bang for your buck that way.
Yeah.
I read one of his books, and I'm not quite sure what to think about that medical medium thing.
So
I'm not one to say something absolutely is this way, because there are so many factors that involve things. So whether you label it autoimmunity or the body is just out of balance, you know, I mean, that's the bottom line, right? Your body's out of balance. If you have a condition they call autoimmune, it's out of balance. They're just putting a label on it so they can bill the insurance. But I'm just not one to set hard and fast rules, except like a whole food diet and stress reduction. There are some good common things there that everyone can agree on, but I'm always about finding the cause and addressing those and then see what happens to the body. Because it was designed to heal itself. So, I mean, I've seen people that are in their 70s and 80s just surprise the heck out of me when they clean their diet up and get rid of the bad stuff and they get better. You know, just amazing.
How about organic versus non-organic? If you're in the vegetable aisle, and what do you think about that as far as triggers?
Yeah, I think that's a big trigger because that falls under that chemical category of chemical toxicity. I'm trying to think of the name of the organization. Forgot it now. They produce a list that's called the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 13. And so if people can't do 100% organic, which would be ideal, then EWG, that's what it is, EWG.org. It's this really cool third-party watchdog group, right? You can go there, EWG.org. You can get listings of makeup and skincare products that are good and not so good. A lot about these organic foods and stuff, but several years ago they came up with these little cards that are the Dirty Dozen, which are the most heavily pesticide fruits and vegetables, and the Clean 13, which is the least pesticide vegetables. So what I tell folks, if they're trying to watch their budget and stuff, that whatever's on that Dirty Dozen list, which is mostly berries, lettuces, apples, some of those are the most biggest offenders of pesticides, that try to eat those organic, you know, the Dirty Dozen. Stay away from those, eat those organic. And the other Clean 13, you know, they may have some pesticides, but it's not a lot. It's not a tremendous amount. So if you're trying to watch your budget, ideally it would all be organic. That being said, when I first got into health 25 plus years ago, I didn't do the organic thing right away. But what I did do is I got away from all the processed stuff and I started eating whole food. And it wasn't even all organic at the time. And I just started feeling a lot better, you know. Of course, I was in my late 20s and I was younger. That was the health problem. Just switching to whole food and no processed food, people feel better. And then ideally organic. Yeah. It just tastes better too. I mean, there's nothing like good organic food in my opinion. And it has more nutrients. They have shown that it has more nutrients when it's grown organically.
That autoimmune can also be caused by environment?
Yes, like do you mean like the pollution kind of stuff or something? Yeah, very much so. Yeah, and that's, I mean, if you look at the levels of pollution toxins in our air and water compared to 100 years ago, it's just astronomical. And the EPA, I don't know if they do it every year or every few years, they do a study where they pick people from around the country and they take samples of their fat tissue and they measure all these toxins in it. And it's pretty bad. I mean, you'd be surprised what they find in these people's fatty tissue. That's why some people, if they lose a lot of weight dramatically fast, they don't feel good in the beginning because they're shedding some of these toxins and they go into their body a little bit. So.
Is there a place to look at, you said,
Yeah, so there is there is a report that they publish, and I don't know how often it is, the EPA, but if you went on the EPA's website and, you know, or Googled EPA fat study or something like that, you'll pull up information that shows the trend of how it's increased over the years. Because they've been doing this for quite a long time now. It just shows we're getting more and more toxic, basically, which is pretty sad. I mean, that's the other thing. It's in that same category, but Roundup, you know, they spray on everything now. they can measure that in a fair amount of people. So when it can be measured in the urine, and it's getting higher and higher in people. And it's because several years ago they used to just spray it during the growth time, but then they found out if they sprayed this stuff close to harvest, especially for like wheat and corn and oats and all this stuff, that it increased their yield. They could actually get a better yield. So they spray even more Roundup than they used to. And so they can actually take like Cheerios and granola bars, as long as they're not organic, and measure Roundup in those things. So, and you'll see lots of class action lawsuits coming about that whole thing down the road. But when it comes to grains, that's, you talked about organic, Chris. Whenever you eat oats, wheat, you know, corn, all that stuff, it should be organic, because it's pretty poisonous, in my opinion, regular commercial grain. It's just not very healthy.
Doesn't sound like a good recipe for health in this country, does it?
It doesn't, no. Yeah. And the funny thing is you can track these other countries that basically were it's called them a third world country that lived a whole food diet. And as soon as they start incorporating the American lifestyle, they start getting sicker. They start getting heavier, and they start getting diabetes and all these conditions that we have now. Yeah, it's actually the perfect storm for ill health in the U.S. right now. It really is. I tell people, oh, it's a lot of work to be healthy. Yes, it is. But the alternative isn't good. So I think I'd go for work now and more health later, ideally. And, you do your best as much as you can. I mean, things come up and things happen and people can still get sick, but it's still better to do your part and try to be as healthy as possible, I think. Yeah. Something else that pushes you off the deep end. Anything else?
What's the dentist's name?
Dr. Chris Edwards, sitting right next to you. Excellent place.